Clay, with your love of starship designs, did you find yourself growing ever so closer to Jack Crusher?
Oh, baby.
In the course of this episode, the bounty?
Oh, baby. Oh, baby.
When he's, oh, baby. When he's, and he's talking about, you know, I don't care about any of this stuff, but I really do love a starship.
Listen, I didn't want to ruin the surprise, but I did write on this episode, and my contribution to this series is Jack Crusher just totally splooshing over the Enterprise A from the motion picture, which is my favorite design as well.
Oh, yep. I think there were deeper cuts. Like, I guess the Defiant can't actually be the Defiant, right? So they just took another Defiant class ship and renamed it the Defiant, I guess.
Can it not? Did it blow up or something?
Yeah, Defiant blew up in the final season of DS9.
Wait, don't they use it in First Contact, or does First Contact
take place before?
Okay.
Yeah,
they do that shit all the time, don't they? With ships and stuff?
Yeah, just renaming them the thing. Well, I guess that's the, you know, whether or not these were actual, I guess they were supposed to be the real ships or whatever, but I don't know. That was one that stuck out. But I think I was reading something that the Registry was a reused other ship that we've seen or something, so they just renamed it Defiant. Whatever.
Sure.
Doesn't matter. This is The Bounty, episode 6 of the third season of Star Trek Picard. It came out on March 23rd, 2023. That's one of those nice numbers. Written by Christopher Monfette, directed by Dan Liu, in-universe date 2401. In this one called The Bounty, now on the run, Picard and the skeleton crew of the USS Titan must break into Starfleet's most top-secret facility to expose a plot that could destroy the Federation. Picard must turn to the only soul in the galaxy who can help, an old friend. So this was the final episode that the critics had seen, I think. So I think we're all holding hands like Toy Story 3 style as we proceed to the end of the season. So what'd you think of The Bounty, which is the quickest picker-upper of an episode I've ever seen?
It's a weird episode because it only really moves things forward very incrementally, but the increment that it moves is kind of important, and the rest of it's just filled out. Like, if you want to criticize the show for doing callbacks, this is the episode you point to. However, like, honestly, it didn't really bother me that much. But I feel like this would have been a bit more impactful if they hadn't been layering this stuff into every crevice of new Star Trek for the past 6 years or however long they've been doing it.
But
that being said, like, some of it made sense to me. Like, I think it makes sense that they have a starship museum and that Geordi runs it. Yeah, why not? He's a good engineer. You need an engineer to run it. Sure, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Moriarty, on the other hand, not so much.
Yeah, sure.
And also, I feel like it must be some sort of a competition in the writer's room of all of these shows to do the weirdest, deepest cut for a callback.
Yeah.
And I think that this show wins, this episode wins, by showing us that on this Section 31 black site, they apparently have the corpse of Kirk.
Yeah.
Why do they have his body?
Why do they have anybody's body? Because they don't just have his, they have Picard's too, for some reason.
But Picard's is like, that's true. Picard's is like at the Institute. Right? They steal it from the same. This
no,
is the
they
place
stole
they stole
it from. Yeah, they stole it from Daystrom.
Okay, all right. Every time they say Daystrom, I'm thinking of the place that Girardi worked in the first season. That was also Daystrom, right? That was like Daystrom.
Yeah, it's got satellite offices all over the universe.
Yeah. Anyway. So they've got some bodies there. Does this mean we're gonna get like a Terminator Salvation style rough CGI version of 1960s Jim Kirk?
I hope so. I hope he has to hunt down the T-1000 version of Picard.
If that happened, if they did that, I would hope that the show would just like once you get to that point, the media file breaks.
Yeah, and the tape is too hot. It just combusts. Yeah,
Paramount Plus just dissolves off of your streaming service because that's it. They've just they've taken it as far as they can go, and now this message will self-destruct.
Yep. Yeah, Kirk's in there. I mean, he's not even the deepest cut. I think the Raven is the deepest cut,
sure,
which is from the Birthright episode where Data dreams about a holographic Raven in his dreams.
Oh, okay. I thought that was so. I'm now realizing that there's a big chunk of TNG that I didn't watch because I didn't do every episode back then.
Yeah.
I don't think I watched the Moriarty episode.
Oh, any of them? There's a couple of them.
Yeah, I don't know if I watched any of those.
Yep. We did. I know we did the second one with Sean and Tana, but I don't think you were a part of it. Yeah.
And I thought that the Raven was, I just assumed the Raven was connected to him. That's a completely separate thing.
It is. It's a different episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's connected in the sense that he's channeling Data's thoughts or whatever, like Moriarty. In this episode, it's connected, but Moriarty did not have like an attack crow or anything like that that he would sick on
people.
That's
too bad.
Yeah. so, yeah, I think this is the point in the season where, you know, as is tradition, I think I give up at this point. Really, I didn't think this one was bad, but it's like, you know,
I was going to say I can tell you why. Mm. It's because they actually have the characters we like together on screen doing stuff.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed Worf and Riker talking to each other.
Yeah,
which
great.
Is fun. Yeah,
yeah.
Although Worf calls himself a pacifist and he beheaded a Ferengi the first time we saw him.
I wish that they had utilized Raffi in that moment to be like, I'm sorry, excuse me.
Right.
Are you not the person that I watched behead a Ferengi and kill five other guys when I was tripping on acid a couple days ago?
You know, I would go even the other, like I would have preferred if Worf didn't kill that guy and he was truly a pacifist at this point in his life. That would be better. But anyway, we can come back to Worf. I thought that now is about the time where I feel this thing that we always go through, which is that we've been giving the show a little bit of rope. Like, all right, well, we'll see where this goes. Like, this is going to build to something. And around this time in the season is always when you realize that it's not going to build to anything and it's not going to be about anything at all. Mm. It's just going to get to the end and do all this stuff. I felt that this was the most obvious, like, outside of even all the Easter eggs and nostalgia stuff, this was the episode that they kind of brought the family-focused theme of the season into its clearest view, and there's nothing there to talk about. And it's so just empty. And like the fact that someone mentioned on the Discord that it's bizarre that Burton or like Geordi's family stuff was not introduced earlier in the season to build towards something. I just don't like...
Well, what are you talking about? What's your name? Shelby or whatever his daughter's name is, had that one scene where she was like, my dad kind of wishes I was an engineer.
Yeah. I think some review was talking about it. It's just like, that's like, just so you remember, every time that character has come on screen, she's brought up Geordi LaForge or her relationship to Geordi LaForge or something, just so you are building towards it. But I think that it's just one of these things where they're just not going to say anything. It's like a Hallmark card take on family. Really, it's like, you know, you came up with this in about 30 seconds. This is going to be your idea. There's nothing really to say about the characters because the characters don't have much of a relationship that we're aware of between like Jack and Picard or Geordi and his family. So you can only speak in these broad platitudes about family, which is like, it's like the worst version of like a love song that has like nothing to say about love that's any interesting thing at all. It's just like a sort of like, it's kind of like Coldplay's Yellow, which is a love song, but it's not about anything interesting about love. It's just kind of this vague idea of what's going on. And it sounds pleasant enough, but there's no thought behind it. There's no like family can cause this to happen, which is great, but also cause this downside to happen, which is particularly interesting. It's like, all right, I guess this is it and this is where we're going to be. And I don't hold out any hope for the Jack and Picard thing to turn into amount to anything. It's just not interesting at all, unfortunately.
It's a universal theme, Wes. Mm. Everybody has a family, and sometimes they disagree.
Yeah. They mildly disagree with each other about what thing to watch on Disney Plus before.
Yeah. You know, I actually liked, in the small amount of time we've had with them, I've liked the Geordi's family stuff way more than any of the other family stuff they've gotten into.
Yeah. feels realistic, I think. Although
it does. Yeah.
Before you go off on Geordi, quick, does Geordi feel right to you in this show, in this episode?
Well, so the thing I was going to get to next is that as much as I like what they did with what his family stuff was about, they did exactly what I was hoping they wouldn't do, which was also Geordi has some reason to be pissed off at Picard. So and like that was what I didn't like, is when he sits down with Picard and he's like, "Don't you understand what you've done? You've put my daughter in danger." It's like, dude, come on, get the fuck out of here. Like, why does everybody have to be pissed off? Why can't one of these guys go, "Yeah, let's do it"?
Right.
You know, it's just, you keep doing this to this one guy, and it's like, give him a fucking break.
I mean,
he's trying to save the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, and he didn't do anything particularly. She's entering a dangerous situation the same that she always enters dangerous situations as a pilot of a starship.
Yeah, and I understand that his anger towards Picard is not anger towards Picard. It's anger because he's afraid for his daughter's life, right?
Yep.
Which is fine, but I just wish that, I don't know, it would have been nice if, like, I would have liked that more if he was one of the only people who was mad at Picard, but everybody seems to get this scene where they channel the things that they're mad or scared about into being pissed off at Jean-Luc Picard. I kind of wish he just would kind of like look around and be like, could anyone give me a break?
I'm so old. Yeah. No, I agree with that.
It was fairly short-lived, but still.
It was. His was the most mild.
Yeah, and that to me feels like having really a lack of anything really interesting to say. Because you're just falling back into the same thing you do every time, which is, Picard meets someone he hasn't seen in 25 years. Oh, it's kind of weird for some reason, and then it's awkward, and then, oh, we get the scene where the other person vents on Picard about all the things that they don't like about Picard, and then Picard looks like he wants to hang himself for 20 minutes. And it's just, I don't know. It's like it feels like it's just manufacturing drama, which you can do a couple times, but when it's every single character has to have like this arc of being pissed off at him and then reconciling with him, it's like, I don't know. Isn't there anybody on the ship who's like, hey, JL.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Where's O'Brien? I bet O'Brien would be happy to see him.
He wasn't personally impacted by Wolf 359. Yeah, I would agree. It's also, it kind of just reminds me that I don't really think that maybe the show has, and I'm just not internalizing it, like explaining what Picard has been doing for the past 20 years. You know, I guess he's just been moping around, is what they were saying in the first season. But
making that sweet sour mead, baby.
Yeah, sour mead, getting low Yelp reviews for the vineyard or something. He's dedicated to that, I guess.
Now, was that comment about his wine a general comment because as a Klingon, he doesn't like human wine?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it specifically that Picard's wine is bad?
I took it specifically as Picard's wine is bad.
Okay,
that
all right.
Worf has a delicate palate at this point that he can sense the difference. Yeah, I mean, the Geordi stuff, I would agree. I thought Geordi also didn't seem quite right to me. He wouldn't be the way that I would write. Like, I was a little bit surprised, mostly because of the fact that he pushes back against Geordi in the way that you're saying all the characters do. But my memory of TNG Geordi is he's probably the least likely character to push back against Picard in a lot of ways. I just don't... I couldn't think of a single scene where he disagrees with Picard about anything, so it felt weird.
Yeah, I don't think I need him to do that though, because I mean, it's been 30 years. He's his own person now. He's got his own family and concerns. I think he's probably closer to the way Burton played him in the movies, which is, you know, it seems like he's got a little bit more beef to him. I actually thought he was really good in the episode.
I thought
he and Worf are by far the two highlights of the show for me anyway.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I don't, maybe it's just how thinly drawn Geordi is that like
you Yeah, can, I mean you, that's yeah, there's not a lot to go on there.
Yeah.
I was thinking though how surreal it must have been for Burton's actual daughter who played his daughter in this episode.
Oh, is that his biological daughter?
Yes. Oh. I can't remember her name. The one who shows up in this one who works with him is his actual daughter.
Oh, not the one who's pretending to be his daughter in
right.
the show. The,
or, yeah.
Yeah, the other one, yeah.
I was just thinking how surreal it must be to stand in the background while your father does this scene with a girl who's not your sister. And he's just telling her how proud of her he is as her father.
Yeah, the director's like, sweetheart, do you mind taking a couple steps to the left
here?
Yeah,
and she's standing back there with no lines going like, you know, I tried out for this part. They could have just given me the part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I didn't... I like seeing Geordi. I guess I mostly just feel that he... Maybe it's because of how thinly sketched out he is, much like Sulu, we talked about in that Voyager episode where... Yeah, I guess you could push him in a lot of directions, and maybe I don't have a leg to stand on about whether or not he feels strange, but I did just... I mostly noticed how forthright he was in standing up. Like, in a way that you're talking about, it's the drama with Picard. It felt to me just like a... it just felt like an awkward place for Geordi to plant himself in opposition, really, based on it being Picard and his family at the same time. I don't know. I guess I would have expected it to go in a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah, even the scene where where they beam onto the Titan, where Geordi beams onto the Titan,
yeah,
and he greets Crusher. And there's that moment where he's like, I don't know if I should give you a polite handshake or a hug. And it, like they're trying to play this slight moment of tension or something. And it's like, why can't just let one person be happy to see everybody else? Like Riker is the closest.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, I feel like Geordi, especially if he's out there working on in the middle of nowhere, working on a fucking museum.
He
by
cries
himself.
When he sees Data. He goes, Data.
Yes. But like, you know, I would like to have seen Geordi be the one who, because everybody else is there, right?
Yeah.
And they're all kind of got their own sort of somber things going on. I would have liked to have seen Geordi be the one who clicks everybody back into place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he shows up, he's excited, hugs all around, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like the gang's back together finally, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a nice refreshing bit of energy.
Yeah, I would agree. I generally like the other character stuff. Like I do think that Riker and Worf work well together. It's hard to extinguish the energy between those two. Their repartee becomes maybe a little bit repetitious after a while because it's just focusing on the Worf change, which is like it's another example of like the Worf change in his personality. I find very interesting, but the show is not particularly interested in describing his journey to this point or even having him explain why he feels this is the way that he should react to things at this point in his life.
I watched the previous two seasons and I really liked that one Romulan character you had, and so I decided to just model myself after him.
Really inspirational. No, it's
what
true.
Happened to that young man? I'd like to meet that boy.
Is Elnor dead? Where is Elnor?
I believe he's dead, yeah.
Did he die? Oh, yeah, he had the time.
Yeah, he died.
Or something, right?
And then they brought him back at the end with the hologram, but they did
right.
not bring him back for real.
Right.
Because he died before they time jumped, I believe.
Rios died in a bar fight. Remember that? That's good stuff.
Rios stayed in the past and then got killed, like, running people over the border or something. what a fucking season, man.
Anyway, Picard, so... You like the see I it's interesting because everyone's talking about the Easter eggs of this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of with you. I didn't think it was egregious. I thought the Starship Museum was the most egregious thing, mostly because they hung on it for so long. When you know Jack is like describing all the ships, and I find it weird to display the ships that way. I do think that that's a strange way to do it.
Well, I mean, think about like what they do now, right? They've got one of those
like the naval yard and stuff.
Yeah, where they've got like a one of those things called aircraft carrier.
Yep.
That they just have a bunch of jets on, and you can go. And so it didn't really seem that weird to me. Mm-hmm. It did feel like
toys in a case in a weird
kind of yeah. It did feel like to me, okay, we're just doing this just because we can. When Jack and Seven very slowly go through each ship and then tell everybody who's watching what the ship is and where it came from. That was like, all right, I'm pushing this a little bit, but
why is Seven still on this show?
I don't know.
Just to include her, just like I said on the Discord that she's the live version of the ships in the show. Like she's just a character that's gonna be here for no particular reason. But she's she sticks out like a sore thumb. And honestly, they didn't have much. There's no real reason for Raffi to be in the show either, because Worf could have just done all the Raffi parts by himself and not had her be involved. But those characters just feel like they're really stuck on there.
He would not care if the ultimatum was, I'm not going to let you see your son if you keep going down this path. Right. He'd be like, that's fine. I guess there's no issue here.
Oh, right. Oh, right, Alexander.
Yeah. The weird thing to me, though, is if Seven in this whole series is the most baffling character, not because she's in it, but because they keep yo-yoing her through all of these character changes and will refuse to stick to one of them.
Yeah.
Like, remember in the last season when she got cured of her Borg thing? And then at the end, she was like, no, I need to be a Borg again.
Yeah. It's who I am.
And then in this one, last episode, or was it, I think it was the last episode of the episode before, there's that whole big thing about only Shaw calls me Captain Hansen. I want to be called, Commander Hansen. My friends call me Seven.
And then this episode.
And in this one, she communicates down and she says it's Commander Hansen.
It's Commander Hansen. I noticed that too. And she's talking to Picard, right? Or someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's talking to Picard. That is very strange. And she reminisces about her time on Voyager in this one. That was her family that she was happy to spend time with or whatever.
I'm still hoping, like, they seem to be throwing everything at the wall for this.
Yeah.
I want to see Kira. I bet Kira would be a nice addition to this, especially, given the Dominion War stuff, but
next episode is called Dominion. So we'll see.
Excellent. Get to the bottom of the Starfleet voting scandal.
Maybe the complaints is for later. I guess the thing to go back to is that, it is largely being discussed as just the Easter egg episode, and it didn't seem particularly egregious to me. It was egregious, but I wasn't throwing my hands up. I'm mostly just disinterested in that stuff. I don't freeze frame the images and look at them or anything like that.
Yeah, I thought it was at least. I think what this show has done better than most of these seasons, of these seasons and series. Is they're using their Easter egg stuff for a narrative purpose instead of just dropping it in there to drop it. Like, it's not just, I mean, some of them are just dropped in there to drop them in there, but it's not like season one of Discovery where for some reason there's a Tribble on the desk and there's a Gorn in the background, or even the last season of Picard where he's just got a room full of skulls of people we know.
Yes.
These things are being used as storytelling devices. Whether or not you like that is totally subjective, but using the Crow and Moriarty as this way to push them towards realizing that it's Data trying to talk to them is at least an interesting way to handle this stuff.
Yes, I would say it's almost as window dressing-y as the Gorn statue, and the fact that it's not building to anything. They've done a better job of connecting it to show you the path forward, if that makes sense. Like, it's not it's not particularly interesting that Data is seeing the Raven. There's nothing specific about the Raven that makes you go like, oh, what a clever choice to use that image. It's just the fact that it exists previously.
Also, another thing that really pissed me off, and this is really, really nitpicky. Riker.
Yep.
Apparently has good enough pitch that he can pick out those notes.
Yeah, perfect pitch.
Perfect pitch. But then when he finishes the phrase with his whistle, he is way off key. It really bothered me.
A little pitchy, dog. A little pitchy.
They couldn't have fixed that in post?
I know. That seems like I'm a drummer, so I'm musically inept, but I was like, it doesn't sound right what he just did. But he unlocked the door. He hit the keys in the right combination.
I wish they had cut to Moriarty going, yeah, yeah, close enough, I guess.
Is it? It'll work. Yeah, we get some nice...
You are not going to Hollywood, sir.
We get some nice HD remastered footage of Encounter at Farpoint, where he whistles the song and everything like that. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I have more to say about the other stuff, but maybe we'll come back to it. So the other interesting thing is that Data's back, and Picard also has a line where he's like, I've seen Data die 57 times. Oh, how must I see it again?
Here we go again.
So Data's back.
Will this guy just fucking die?
This is the downside of thinking that death is just something that you can do to characters to sort of make someone cry, basically, and not have it be a way to get rid of characters from a show or have a greater reason to kill them off in the first place. Mm-hmm. So Data just keeps coming back, and they have to come up with more and more clever ways to make Spiner not look like he's just an old man wearing Data cosplay makeup.
So I actually liked I liked what they did here. Yep. I thought it was interesting. However, like, I could not stop thinking about the pitch meeting when they come to Spiner and they go, Brent, we want you to come back for one more season. He's like, what? What do you want me to do? I don't want to play Data again. You're going to make my face. He goes, no. You're going to get to play every single character you've ever played at once. And he goes, I'm sorry. I need to go change my pants.
No, and then sign the contract. It's true. I mean, and that performance is just as Easter eggy as anything else, really. It's like,
do you remember at the end of Tropic Thunder when Robert Downey Jr. cycles through all of his characters as he's coming out of the method performance? That's what that scene felt like when he was like, I'm Data. Now I'm Lore.
I'm B4. He did a good job with it.
He did.
It is a good performance, but it's like, I think that's my key takeaway was that, like, I was entertained enough by this episode, I guess, and I was watching it. But it's one of those things that it's like, it really is, it's hard to describe without feeling like I've said it over and over again, but you're like, I'm just watching it and there is no stacking of pieces. And it's really kind of fascinating. Like, when things like Data appear, it doesn't make me feel like this is going to go anywhere. It doesn't even give me like an emotional, like, oh, it's Data. Like, what a clever use of Data to make this appearance. It just feels like they're going to bring him in. He's going to be gone by the next episode. And then we're just going to proceed to the next thing. And I don't feel like the story itself feels a lot like the Titan. Like, it's just floating in one space for a lot of the time. And I really wish it just moved forward a little bit more, and it wasn't so hung up on doing all the lore and Data stuff. But I mean, it is what it is at this point. It's just I really don't feel like this story has any momentum to it, much in the way that season two of Picard had no momentum to it. It just doesn't feel like they don't have a point that they want to get to, and so there's nothing that they're really investigating in the moment because no one's sure where we're supposed to arrive at in the future.
Yeah, it's it does feel. It is definitely enjoyable. I'm enjoying watching it. I'm enjoying seeing the characters that I like, doing things that I like. But it does feel kind of hollow, even if you compared it to, like, the worst of the TNG movies.
I was thinking I would much rather watch Nemesis than this.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking, was that Nemesis is kind of dealing with the same themes, but at least it commits to it as a unified piece. When you've got the idea of Picard's legacy, and then you've got this other stuff going on with Data. Like, there's stuff the thematic stuff is driving the story more.
Yeah.
And you could definitely say that the problem with the movies is that they tend to pick one character. It's usually Picard or Data or both. And everybody else gets kind of short shrift.
Yep, which is true.
And in this, yeah, it's true. And in a season like this, you get a lot more stuff from a lot of, from the people you want to see, right? Like yeah. You've seen Riker do more stuff in this show than he's done in any of the movies, basically.
Yep, yep.
Everybody except Troi. She's just she's just in a box until they need her.
She's on the TV screen in the box. Well, I think it's important because the movie, you know, the movie, not 100% match, but the movie replaces Jack and it replaces him with Data in Nemesis. Like there's a Data and Picard relationship there, which mm-hmm. is akin to family in the sense of like, it's like, you know, learning to eventually separate and stuff like through Data's death and Data's very, throughout the movie and all the cutscenes and stuff that they had is Data's very, Data's growing as a person, much in the way that like Jack should be growing as a child into a man from this relationship, whatever. But the mm-hmm. thing is that in the movies, I know who Data is. And yeah. Data in Nemesis is not having a sleeper agent subplot tacked onto him that I'm going like, well, how is this going to backfire once we get yeah. down the line? So that's just why I think that the stuff in Nemesis works better, because the stuff here is so it's my criticism of the previous episodes. It's like it's written. It feels like it's written by someone who doesn't have a kid, because all they're doing is there's like a Hallmark. You have the best of me and the worst of me. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. okay, I guess so. But is that the best you could do? No one on the staff had a deeper insight into the child relationship than that. That's the best they can come up with.
If this was written by someone who had a child, it would have been, you have the best of me and the worst of me, but I hate you more than I ever hated myself.
there's an angle there about, because I continue to think that a parent and child being separated for 20 years and coming together as both grown adults is a deeper, more interesting thing that's being portrayed here. And honestly, the thing that's been most surprising to me about Jack is that Jack is kind of down with Picard pretty quickly. He's not he's not anti-Picard for most of this. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think even if you go back and look at the first season of Picard, that one thematically, even though they brick it spectacularly at the end, the first season of Picard is much more clearly about something than this season is.
Yeah.
The execution, not so great, but there's, it felt like they were telling a story that had a purpose to it for the most part, at least trying to.
Yeah. Reconciling your legacy, basically.
Yeah. You know, he's at the end of his life, blah, 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 all that kind of
has
shit.
Has the synth plots about and subhuman, you know, treatment of non-human people and stuff.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. This one is just, yeah, it just kind of feels like they're just doing stuff, which is fine. I mean, I'm like I said, I'm enjoying it, but it's just, they're just doing stuff. It's all of the thematics are fairly surface level. And like, it's so much so that I'm looking at this going like, all right, what is this season about? Like, what is the driving theme here?
Yep.
And it seems to just be family.
Yes, which is not to overstate that it is just family. It's not difficulties within a family or anything.
No.
It's just family.
This entire season is just the last 10 minutes of a Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah,
where everybody's sitting around the picnic table and Vin Diesel's raising his Corona to like that's all it is.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's very strange because it's like I can't decide if they're doing this to specifically avoid having to do difficult things with these characters and just saying like, all right, guys, victory lap. Let's go out. Let's at least get a couple guys around the bases before we lose this game here.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think you could argue that, like, all right, if you want to do something really interesting, you're probably going to have to crack this egg a bit more as far as these characters, who they are and how they relate to each other. And like, is that something at this point that people want to see? My argument would be like, you know, fuck what they want to see, make the show you want to make.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it feels like it's just a Star Trek victory lap. And it's like, I mean, if it was, I would have much more of a problem with that if it was actively bad. But it's, I'm enjoying watching it.
Yeah.
Even though it's, some of the stuff ain't making a ton of sense regarding right now, regarding like the changelings and whatnot. But it's like, ah, whatever. Okay, whatever. I'm on board. Let's, I like Shaw. I really like Shaw being nervous to talk to Geordi. I really like that scene.
I realized that Shaw is a Vulcan in an Enterprise episode. I learned that.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. In one of the season four, the Vulcan arc, he's one of the, like, the
Vulcans. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I guess it depends on where you end up. Like, so I would also be for just a very, like, simple, this is the last hurrah of this crew doing these things. Mm. If that's the case, because on a personal level, what I'm most interested in is actually the changelings. And
yeah.
I get the sense that the changelings are just going to be the ships on that station, which is that they're an enemy that they've brought in that kind of work because they can hide amongst the ship easily. Mm-hmm. And you know who they are. And I have to imagine that they're going to be, they brought it up here, but the Section 31 virus has to do something to them. That has to be the cause of what they are at this point. Mm-hmm. And, but outside of that, I think that the show just isn't treating them in a way that makes a lot of sense, and it's not going to, I don't think it's actually going to get into really what the changelings are at this point or give us a lot of like food for thought about it. But it's also just kind of distractingly tacked on to a TNG show, you know? So it's like,
yeah,
I'm two steps away from being like, well, it's kind of weird to hear Picard talking about this because Picard never talked about the Dominion at all. So it's strange that this is his connection. And it's just such an interesting like thing from a TV show that I really enjoyed that I want them to get more into that. But that's a distraction from what the Picard show should be at the same time.
Yeah. The changeling stuff is strange to me because now we are at the point where they've made it very clear that Vedek is a changeling, like just straight up a changeling.
Yep.
But now the presentation of her character seems so fucking weird in retrospect. And it's looking back, they only do this as a way to obscure the fact that she's a changeling. Like it yep. has no other purpose. Like her weird bird guy crew.
Yep.
That's just what they chose to look like.
That's what they choose to look like. It makes no sense. Yeah.
Like I know you probably, it would probably be hitting the fan service buzzer or something too much, but like imagine if she showed up the first time and flying her ship, there's like a Klingon, there's a guy in Starfleet uniform, right. Jem'Hadar or something.
Yeah.
Where now you're going like, whoa, what is going on here? Is this every, has every villain from Star Trek finally teamed up or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of just obscuring the fact that they're changelings by making them this weird bird thing that you never get a look at anyway.
Yeah. Well, that was my point about why. That's my point about how the ship can't be a changeling ship because it does not seem designed for right. changelings. It's
yeah.
They must have stolen it or something.
Do you think the Jem'Hadar are going to show up?
No, I don't think so.
No. I would love to see. I will say, as far as we remember, we talked about the difference between the Darth Vader in Rogue One and Michael yep. Keaton Batman in The Flash.
Yeah,
I would love to see Darth Vader in Rogue One level Worf just fucking up some Jem'Hadar guys. Like that would be unbelievable.
I was hoping if we did see the Jem'Hadar, Worf would be a pacifist the whole season until he runs into that old Jem'Hadar who we fought in that DS9 episode in like the fist fight to the death, and then he just goes at that guy like the Superman versus Zod.
You know, isn't that that's okay? You just hit something on the head here too, where it's like they're putting these pieces in, which are interesting, but the way that they are dramatically giving them to us is not as satisfying as they could be.
Yeah.
Because you've got Worf, who is by for all intents and purposes, he says he's a pacifist, right? But you can't resist. You can't resist having the first thing he does show up and just kill 15 guys.
Right.
If you had, imagine if they had just leaned into this and made him pacifist until like the last episode, and then he cuts loose,
right?
Like Vader in Rogue One, and just kills 15 guys. That would be so much more satisfying.
It would be pretty awesome. Like if we had never seen him fight at all. You mean leading up to?
Yeah. You know, like you do the same thing. And Raffi's like kind of passing out, and Worf is taking them down like Batman from the shadows, right? And shit. And you don't see, but they're all like knocked out or whatever, and then you go through the whole thing. They're still fighting, but he's fighting like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he's teaching her how to fight or whatever.
Yep.
And then at the end, for whatever reason that sets him off, he goes fucking ham and just starts like punching through changelings and like tearing them in half and shit.
It would be pretty awesome. I can't deny it. That's the, you know, it's. I think that's what connects this season with the prior seasons, is that they're, the pieces are there. There just doesn't seem to be much thought put into how you would connect them to string them together more effectively.
Yeah.
And that leads to our constant comment about like the note cardiness of it, which is that you have the bunch of ideas, but you just can't seem to string together why this scene would motivate the characters to move into this next scene in a way that's effective. And I would have loved to, like, my biggest disappointment is that because you've got all the cast of characters together again, I would have just focused on that group. Like, I just don't see the need to bring in Shaw. I don't see the need to bring in Seven. I would have just come up with some way to have this cast go off on like a shuttle, you know, for a week or something.
And you guys wait here.
And they do
we'll
something
We'll be back
like
in
that.
A couple days.
Because the moments that are the highlights are that the show is incapable of extinguishing the chemistry between those actors who have been working with each other for 15 years at that point. That's the best stuff. And that's potentially what's the most disappointing about Worf, is that pacifist. I'm really interested in Worf as a pacifist. I find that very interesting. But they haven't, that's not been the case. That's not what he is. He just talks that way. And the show is not, you know, it's our comments in the earlier episodes of this season. The show will say something that I go, oh, like Worf is being a hypocrite here. I'll wait for someone to call him out, but no one will call him out because the show doesn't understand that he's being hypocritical.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny. I think that this, they really fucked up their whole series structure, because this should have been the first season. Like, if what they're doing here should be pasted on to Picard is dying and he has one last thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that really how this should have gone?
Yeah.
Because and now they already played that card in the first season, and now they'd played the Q card in the second season. So now they've got nothing left, basically.
Yep.
It's just a weirdly strung together show that, again, I'm enjoying watching it. I like watching these people play these characters, but more than that, it's not really not a lot of oomph there for me. I will say, okay. The thing with the cloaking device, right?
Yeah. Stealing the Klingon, the bounty.
Yeah, stealing the, yeah. They say that all of the ships are linked.
Yes, Bluetooth of the 25th century.
Right. So I would assume that would include the Titan, right?
Yeah, that's how they're tracking the Titan.
So they go to this place that is full of old ships. And they even drop, I guess this was a red herring, if you want to call it that. But they're trying to get Geordi to help them, and his daughter's like, well, what about Hangar F or whatever she says? And he's like, no, don't talk about that. And as soon as she said that, I was like, oh, of course, they're going to get the fucking Enterprise.
Right.
And because the Enterprise is an older ship that is not part of the Bluetooth system.
Right.
And they're going to be good to go.
Yeah.
So we know the Enterprise is in this show at some point. If they have to go back there to get it, I'm going to be so mad. Because, like, what else? That's what has to be in that hangar, right? It has to be the Enterprise.
Yeah, well, now I'm trying to remember. Do they not talk about... No, they're talking about the cloaking device, aren't they?
No, this is before the, this is before that whole section. It's like as soon as they get there, when if I remember correctly,
yep.
Picard is laying out what's going on and then asking for Geordi's help. And his daughter mentions some hangar, just like, you know, throwaway line. Well, what about the thing that's in hangar F? And he just kind of like shoos her
away. I found it here. So Alondra mentions something in hangar bay 12 that could help them, but her father shuts that down. Picard insists this is life or death, but Geordi retorts it's always life or death. Is that the only mention of hangar? That's the only mention of hangar, so it never comes up again.
So I guess you could argue that maybe the bounty is in Hangar Bay 12, but I have to imagine that's not what it is.
Oh, well, when did they find the...
Because they don't I think find it out is, about because the bounty.
Then, but then don't she and Jack steal the cloaking device at that point, right?
Yes.
They worked.
Well, no, that comes later. That's like that because they only find out about the cloaking device in the scene where Jack and Seven are going through all the ships.
Right.
Which is later in the episode.
Yes.
I mean,
I think they're just coincidentally arriving at the same point. So Alondra knows that it's there and Jack is told by Seven that it's there and then they come together to steal it.
So I am willing to believe that, but I think if you're going to do that, you have to specify somewhere on screen that this is in Hangar Bay 12. Otherwise,
waiting for the Enterprise.
Yes.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the other weird thing would be that they would have to go back and they did not show us the Enterprise in the first place, that it exists
right
there, you know?
Yeah. Unless the Enterprise is still, the Enterprise F, I guess, is still out there.
Oh, still active.
Doing stuff. Who's left from the show that could be the captain of the Enterprise F?
And Moriarty's original version.
It's going to be Dr. Pulaski as the captain of Enterprise F.
Is the plot here that the changelings are going to attack a Federation parade and cripple the Federation?
We didn't even talk about that. Like what's got.
They're waiting
Frontier
Day, right? Where the whole,
yeah,
all the ships are going to be together for some reason.
I don't think anybody was expecting the Changelings plot to be to steal the corpse of Jean-Luc Picard. Like, are they gonna puppet it or something? Like a and have him go down and say like I think the Starfleet is bad.
Is there a weekend with Bernie's with Vadek, yeah, and Jean-Luc's corpse? Yeah, because he doesn't.
We
have...
should all love the Changelings.
Well, I mean, is aromatic syndrome going to be some kind of cure to the Section 31 virus or something?
Oh, maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
I can't believe that feels like such a modern New Trek thing. Like I would never, in none of the older shows or movies, would it be even considered that like a large amount of the Starfleet is all together in one spot for a parade. You know? That's like,
yeah,
that's ridiculous. That makes no sense.
That's going to really... people who've been listening to this show for years know how much it bugs me when they show the ships are like within walking distance of each other in space.
Well, no, but so, wasn't that this episode where they find the beacon of the Titan and the three ships come within like 10 feet of each other and
yes,
they warp into
yes.
that? Yeah.
Yeah. So when they get to that scene where they've just got every ship in the fleet jammed into the screen, like those posters, those posters that show you the size difference of starships
right,
and
yeah.
science sci-fi things. It's going to be one of those posters,
just stacked on top of each other. That'll be really dumb. I don't think I have anything else about the changeling. I guess the last thing is just the Terry Metallis. This is why you never trust any of these things that they released earlier. So Metallis did that interview with one of the Trek channels on YouTube before the season started, and they asked him about the android, like Picard's new robot synth android human cyborg body, and he said, we touch on, it's like we pay a little bit of lip service, but it's not really going to be a focus. It's clearly very important to the Data plot here, right?
Like, yeah.
And I understand that he can't say things about the season, but it's like, why watch those interviews at this point?
Yeah.
But I'm so, like, I think that the synth body stuff is such a perfect encapsulation of, I don't know what the show is talking about. Like,
yes, yeah.
Doesn't this undermine the point of this first season? All I could think about was the first season ended in such a really weird way that I'm not even sure what the show was saying at that point about Picard being reborn. no one seems to really... They all... Every character in the later seasons brings it up as a pseudo-insult to Picard, who does not seem to care at all that they mm-hmm. consider him to be an unnatural life form. And now it's just like Data is the final form of this thing. And, you know, like... I kind of shut off my brain once they got the Data and Daystrom thing, because it's like, I'm not going to really think about what this means or what Data's doing, but like, it just, it ends in a spot where you're like, that went 360 to bring us all the way back to the synths being incorporated into this again in a way that feels like you're bookending the series or something. But boy, I don't know what to think about any of this at all.
There was so much backflipping going on to explain why Brent Spiner just is old now.
Yeah. He's
like that whole thing was him was Sung being like, I've put him into a new body that he just looks like an old guy because he has more wisdom now or some shit. Like, you know, it's supposed to be this profound idea, and it's just to explain why they don't have to spend money on half-assed special effects on Brent Spiner's face.
Yeah. It's too bad.
And that's the thing. Like, it's the concept of combining all of these different disparate versions of the Data style android into one
the
thing.
The Sung family.
Is actually a really interesting idea. And I think it's a cool evolution that they have evolved Data into this other thing and whatever. But like it in and of itself doesn't feel important enough to the season for it to really matter at all.
Well, they'd have to bring Data back. Like, Data's not continuing, right? That's my assumption. So the problem with it is that what they've done thematically matches the family motif that they've got going on, but it has nothing interesting to say about what the Sung family being brought under one roof would be about. It's just it's just Spiner playing all four voices off of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean... What do you mean that you don't think he's coming back?
I don't think Data's going to be a active character in the rest of the series. I might be wrong about that, but
I think he probably will be.
So he's going to be like walking around on the ship?
I think so. Okay. Especially because I think the clip that they use in the trailer of him saying lore, I don't think is from this episode. So
how did they get him out at the end? Am I they beam him out, don't they?
They beamed him out.
They do. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. They do. I forgot that they beam him out at the end.
The thing that I kept waiting for, and I was a little bit bummed that they did the personality jumping in this.
Yeah.
Because I just kept waiting for him to pull the good old lore trick, where he's like acting like he's Data, and then all of a sudden he's like, no, I'm Lore, you fucking morons.
It's the Me, Myself, and Irene bit where he sleeps with Renee Zellweger pretending to be, you know, the good version of his psychosis. Yeah.
I think the change into Lore is such a cool little moment that they really kind of wasted it here.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably going to be, I think it's probably going to come back. I would be... No, that wouldn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, I would go back on my point then, because the Data thing has potential to be interesting.
Yeah.
Seeing as how all of the family are inside that one body. So do you think that they're going to continue to have him be schizophrenic about it, or are they going to turn him into someone that they can actually talk to and have it mean something?
I think if I had to guess, I would say it will end with him as a single person, but until then, I think he's probably going to be schizophrenic.
Okay.
Which, if they do that, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Because I was thinking, like, is there a chance that this is all a big game and it's actually Lore who's behind everything?
Right.
But I was trying to think about if he's the AI thing at the Daystrom Institute, he's only been there for like 2 years, right?
Yeah, he's a recent development. That's why Moriarty made more sense as the AI.
I'll be interested to see where it goes. I think that would be a fun rug pull, albeit one that's probably a bit expected if Lore ends up being the person behind everything.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I don't know.
Does Data die again at the end of this?
I fucking hope not. Just let the guy live. Kill Picard. Do what we all... Okay, this is what we want. Put Picard's brain in Data's body. Right. So you can end the show with Brent Spiner doing his amazing Patrick Stewart impression.
I'd be down for that.
Jack's just dying?
Yeah, he's got irritability or whatever.
That can't be it, right?
The diagnosis is wrong, you mean?
Well, I mean, there has to be more to it than that, right? It just can't be that he's
Yeah, I think the diagnosis is wrong. I think it's whatever is being done to him is being diagnosed as irritable or whatever it's called syndrome. Yeah.
Irritable syndrome, between him and his father, we know that the symptoms of irritable syndrome are hallucinating doors.
Yes, it's tremendous trauma related to doorknobs and all door related difficulties.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does he hallucinate the door again in this episode? He doesn't have a hallucination, does he?
No, I don't think so.
No. I'm just trying to think. I'm still like I'm just not even interested enough to think about what the door represents. Like, are they going to connect the door to the season 2 door? You know, or is it just a coincidence that it's another door?
Yeah, I think it's just a hastily put together metaphor. I think for whatever else is going on here. Mm.
Then I guess we're done. Deanna Troi is captured, and she might be a changeling. But Will Riker doesn't seem to be open to that possibility, so we'll see. That's it, I guess. So the next episode is called Dominion. Was this episode 5? No, this is 6, right?
6.
This is episode 6. Yeah. So the bounty. I don't have any point to go out on. Do you have a point to go out on?
I don't think so.
She was fine, I guess.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. I think for the most part, I think it's run about as well as any other fine show on television.
Yeah.
Like an inoffensive show on television.
You mean fine in the opposite of like a fine vase. You mean just it's fine. It is fine.
It's just a fine, fine show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine.
I'm just bummed that they wasted the Worf berserker rage so early.
I know. Do you like his new makeup?
I think it looks good.
Yeah.
I think they adjusted it pretty well.
Slim down. It looks more, less like he's like this like blockhead bulbous person. And apparently it's much easier for him to get in and out of the makeup. So that's
good. I have to imagine it's night and day for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess going forward, my concern would be that this episode did feel a little bit of a turning point to me in that it brought me back to memories of earlier modern Trek seasons, and it's sort of that point where the snowball gets over the apex of the hill and it's just going to start rolling down, like destroying everything that goes in its path. Because I feel like these shows have that kind of momentum storytelling going for them, so.
Do you think, I'm going to kind of throw the question you asked me at the end of the last episode back at you. Do you think that they've done enough at this point as far as moving the stories along for where we are in the season?
No, it's still too slow.
Yeah.
But it's mostly I would be fine with like sort of where we are technically, I think is okay, but they don't fill the moments that got to this point with enough stuff to make me feel like it was a worthwhile journey that we couldn't have gotten here faster, really. That's ultimately my core problem with it, is that, like, you know, the Raven episode is from Birthright, where you could kind of argue, or at least I argue, that that was the end of Data's story run on TNG. It was the episode where he learns that he can dream and he starts having dreams about things. And it was like a nice little break from he no longer was a machine that could be sort of explained at that point. I think he ends the episode just, he's sort of unsure of where things are coming from and like how this is factoring into his development and stuff. And it felt like it was a nice bridge episode. And, you know, it has the Raven, it has a holodeck adventure kind of thing to it, but it has at its core something that's important to say about Data. And I just don't feel that this show and the season has anything to say that's important about any of the other characters, which is the saddest thing. Like the biggest thing to me about like the reason to do this is that everyone was saying that you do a show, a season like this to cancel out the sour tastes that Nemesis left in everybody's mouth. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think at this point, this show, this season is not canceling out Nemesis to me. It's not fixing the things that were wrong with Nemesis as a way to say goodbye mm-hmm. to everybody.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest letdown of it. I wish there was just more of the characters that we know sitting in a room together talking about something that felt important to them as a group, where they're all different at this point coming back together, but they still have a common bond as family that's being represented there. The bond that they have as family is better than any bond that Jack Crusher can stir up in this stuff. So that's all. That's my feelings about it.
Yeah. do you think this works better if the story is that this is kind of the same thing that they did in the first season, but if the story was Worf is out there undercover and he's like the one, basically the rest of the family has to come together to bring back Worf, who has been out there doing shit for some reason. I don't know, that he's pulled away from everybody, pulled away from society. He's out doing clandestine black ops shit.
Yep.
And now they have to bring his family has to reach out and bring him back.
Yeah.
Off from the brink kind of thing.
Yeah, and I can see Worf being portrayed as, with his newfound pacifism, he's sort of lost his grip on reality or something, is like the perception of what's gone on with Worf. But mm-hmm. Worf is aware of something that's happening out there, be it the changelings or anything else like that.
Yeah, like imagine if it was Worf going, just losing it. If it was like Worf as a conspiracy nut who is trying to warn people about the changelings, and
right.
people are like, dude, that was 30 years
yeah,
ago.
They're all gone. Yeah.
They're all gone. We sent them a bunch of blankets with some shit on it and they're all dead. Like, honestly, even that is an interesting thing that I don't feel like they're going to touch on.
Yeah. Cause
I feel like they totally hand wave that in this episode too.
Oh, you're talking about the virus.
The virus.
Where Worf just goes, both sides did very bad things.
Well, and also when they talk about the virus, I think Picard says, well, we sent them the cure like 5 years later. So it's not bad. It's like, isn't it so much more interesting if it's like the Federation dealing with the fallout from using a fucking weapon of mass destruction?
Yeah,
you know, it, like, okay, sure, these guys aren't attacking you anymore, but look what's happened to them.
No, it's good. I mean, that would be, it's kind of neat to do that, which would be to have a TNG outlook on a DS9 story problem, you know.
Yeah especially because that way, I mean, you don't have to fall back to the old Starfleet is evil bullshit, because you now have an interesting ethical question akin to the dropping of the atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, I mean, we did what we had to do to win the war, but at what cost ultimately?
Right.
You know, we didn't drop the bomb because we were infiltrated by Ferengi or something.
Right.
I mean, well, I guess it depends who you talk to. Maybe there's some people, maybe, I don't know what Oliver Stone has to say about it, but you know, like there's the perception that Starfleet is a good entity.
Yep.
And the Federation is good, and they did something that is hard to objectively comment on.
Yeah, and you can attach it to reality to give it a little bit of grounding too, which is that, you know, after the nuclear weapons were dropped, it changed the game. It changed the playing field for realistic war scenarios between in the actual like our world. You know, the biological weapon against the changelings could do something similar to that, which is that like biological warfare is now like a possible universe-ending realistic universe-ending threat in this world that they've built, and you can deal with the fallout there and have the discussion about that.
Especially if they did the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, we used that weapon once and then we banned it and we said no one can ever use this weapon. And the changelings are like, oh, great.
Yes.
That's great for you guys, but it's a little bit late over here.
The changelings just start making consumer electronics and just reinvent themselves.
And their porn gets real weird.
They've got the tentacles at the ready.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's it. Any final thoughts about the bounty?
There is one thing we didn't talk about, which is we do learn something interesting in this that we didn't know before, which is that B4 does not seem to be fully functional because they have his body parts and he ain't got no dick.
Was there a picture of B4 in this?
There was. Yeah. Oh. There was, his body was in there, like disconnected, and his torso was just like suspended.
Yeah.
And I noticed because, you know, I had to know.
Yeah.
I was staring. They composed it in a, such a way where there was always something like right across his crotch.
Yeah.
And then there was one shot where they showed him full torso and he looked like a Ken doll. So
why doesn't Barbie get pregnant?
I don't know.
Because Ken comes in a different box.
Very nice.
We're done. Thanks everybody for listening. Patreon.com/thePenske File. If you are listening to this, you obviously support us. But if this ever gets released to the general public, much like a Section 31 virus, you'll be able to support us after the fact at patreon.com/.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And I guess we'll be back with, I'm pretty sure the next episode is called Dominion. I'm going to click to make sure it is Dominion. It doesn't have a little tag yet or anything. Was there a teaser for the next season? I don't seem to notice these if they're up there. I think they post them later.
They don't do them on the episode.
Okay.
I can look for it in real time and waste some time, or we can just not.
We'll just wait. Because I don't think anyone posted it in the Discord yet, so it's probably, maybe they're waiting. Maybe that would be a smarter idea to just wait and do it. But it's written by Jane Maggs. Which is a great Cy Tolliver name. Jeannie Maggs. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next time with Dominion.